we're not replacing the P2P network. We are building a superhighway on top of it so that our users and important actors in the market can take advantage of it. BlockRail will become a powerhouse in DeFi, which we're already on the track of doing that. Meaning that if you are trading on DeFi, algo trading, and you are a significant player in the MVV space and DeFi, you pretty much should get a lot of value being our partner or our user.
You have just heard from Curtis Plotmack, Chief Business Officer at BlockRail Labs, the Flash Boys for decentralized finance. BlockRail created the first high-performance blockchain distribution network with the fastest relay solution for Ethereum, BNB Chain, Polygon, and Solana. The BlockRail BDN and DeFi trading tools allow its users to win at crypto trading. So let us dive right in.
Good morning. I'm very happy to be here with Curtis Mack from BlockRail. Good morning, Curtis.
Good morning, Norbert. Really good to be here.
When I saw BlockRail for the first time, I had to think Flash Boys, the Michael Lewis book, and was intriguing because I didn't think something like Flash Boys would exist in crypto yet, but clearly here we are talking about just that, getting the bigger weapons to get faster transactions. Please explain to us how BlockRail came about and what problems you're solving.
Okay, that's a very broad question. I'll start with very briefly introduce the core value that we offer to the most important target group. If you look at the existing DeFi, our very short thesis is DeFi eventually should be as good as CeFi, if not better. We all get what's good about DeFi with the self-custody and all the advantage, but right now, it's fair to say that compared to what you're going to get in CeFi, it's slow, inefficient, and the worst part is it also comes with fun running. Even we work in DeFi, we have to admit that it's just not as good as CeFi. Maybe for somebody who's not super familiar with the DeFi-CeFi comparison, I'll give you just like what it is right now. In a typical case, let's say you use Coinbase or Binance to do digital asset trading, swap, do everything. So what you're going to get is you're going to see the price you're going to buy a digital asset or sell a digital asset, and you execute it in a split second, you get to compete and you know what you get. That's great. That's pretty close to what you get in TradFi, trading securities and whatnot. But when you compare it to the experience you're getting on DeFi, a very typical case to use DeFi to do similar things that I just mentioned would be buying something like Uniswap. You have your wallet connect on Uniswap, and let's say you're going to buy some ETH with USDC. First thing is, good chance you have to wait for half a minute or a couple minutes to get the transaction complete. When the network is congested, it can wait for 15, 20 minutes. It's not out of the world. And at one time, I remember 2 years ago when I was trying to bridge my asset from Ethereum to Polygon, it took me 12 hours. I was so freaked out because I was sending not a small amount. Then it got stuck the whole time and I wasn't knowledgeable enough to know, did something actually happen? Turns out, of course, I eventually got to compete, but it was a very scary experience to me. I assume that for users who's been actually actively take part in DeFi have similar kind of experience. Like I said, it's slow, not very reliable, and it's as efficient. For example, when you want to trade, when you buy something, you are not going to get the current correct price on DeFi. Unlike on CeFi, this is the exact price. This is $1,800 for one ETH. You're not going to get DeFi. And you don't have three monitors to monitor all the price on all the potential DEXs you can have. So it's not as good. And I'm just taking the end user perspective to it. But imagine you are running a project, you are doing DeFi algo trading, you are doing market making, you experience the same thing, if not worse. Here is what BlockRail comes in. The most important offer we have is our blockchain distribution network. Instead of telling you what exactly it is, I'll take my favorite analogy to what it does. Compared to DeFi peer-to-peer network, where you do all the trading, send all the transactions, block data goes in, goes out, that would be more like you're having your phone and the only connection you have on your phone is a 3G network you connect to. That's pretty much what I mentioned as the P2P network. It gets the things done, but just not as fast and not as reliable. BlockRail's BDN is like a 5G network. It's super fast and reliable. And on your phone, you can connect to your 3G network plus a 5G network at the same time. And your phone will always be able to pick the faster network and take advantage of it. That's the best analogy I came up with to describe the relationship between the P2P network and BlocksRoute. You may ask, why do I want that speed? I'm okay with waiting for half a minute for that transaction. But for a lot of other groups that I mentioned, if you're running a project, if your users actually are waiting for their transactions to get complete, or you are a trader, you are a market maker, where every single millisecond matters, having that 5G network like worth $1 million to you, because that creates so much value. Without going into any technical details, without getting into how we get it done, I think that would be a very good summary of what BlocksRoute offers.
You mentioned in the introduction that if I use it, it prevents me from being front run. But on the other hand, isn't that the dual use weapon? So I could also use it maliciously to front run other people, because then I have the information faster.
Yes, I think you're right on the point. I'm not saying that BlocksRoute, all the products, is to protect the user or giving our users the option to do it. Because for DeFi, when you view it as a new financial network, just like the TradFi world, when there is money to be grabbed, money will be grabbed by somebody. If that includes fun running sandwich, like running the sniping bots or just doing regular market making, all the things, all this activity will be done because there is money to capture there. We provide the tools to make DeFi better, a better experience, more efficient, faster, higher performance with the same infrastructure. How it's going to impact the game, for sure, we're making it way better. But to your point, fun running being a very hot topic and a lot of people's concern, I would say that it's not about how many people are running the sniper bots or how many MEV searchers are doing that, because people are going to do it. Either it's 50 MEV searchers or 5,000, an army of MEV searchers, it's going to be the same. You're going to get fun run if you allow them to on the MEV topic or the fun running topic. It's all about two things. A, for the users, do they have the knowledge and understanding of their potential loss for being front run? That's the most important part, because if you don't have that, that means nothing, right? The starting point is all about getting the users educated and aware of this potential loss that they do when they do swap or anything on DeFi. That's the first part. The second part, B, is all about on places they are doing the transactions. I'm talking about the DEXs, the wallets, all those DeFi projects or different platforms. When they do it, are they given an easy to access tools to protect themselves against fun running? If we have A and B, it's problem solved. It's not about making the tools not available for fun running or something. It's more about doing A and B. If we have A and B done correctly, then this is a better place, I would say.
If I was a prospective customer and want to start a market making desk, how involved is it to set up BlocksRoute for me to protect me against these malicious attacks? Is that easy as plugging in a second cable?
There are two parts of it. So first of all, I would tell you how it's going to benefit you as a market maker. And then the second part will be talking about how we protect you against potential fund running or malicious transactions. So first of all, if you're a market maker or anybody who run a DeFi project or do any format of DeFi algo trading, what you usually do is you run your own node on a cloud service provider, let's say AWS, because that's where you start from. Then as a BlocksRoute user, you would install our open source gateway in the same instance of that cloud service, just next to your node. And then you would set our gateway as a trust peer of your node. In a regular node that you're doing trading or doing like service, you will have 50, 100, or 200 peers in that node. BlocksRoute will be one of the 100 or 200 peers that you have. You do your regular thing like getting transaction data, block data, and sending your transactions. What you will find out is after installing that and set us as the trust peer, around 95% of the time, you will receive the transaction data and block data from our gateway first, compared to your other 100, 200 peers, because we're way faster than all your peers. In general, that would give you on mempool data, meaning the upcoming transactions, you'll get usually from 50 to 200 milliseconds faster in terms of mempool data. And on transaction propagation, It varies, but it's fair to say that usually between 200 to 600 millisecond faster in terms of transaction propagation. If you are a market maker, is a world of difference. Some very basic numbers just on the faster mempool data alone, when we measure it with some partner traders we have, that would give them around 20 to 30% more trade opportunities alone with the faster mempool data, because they capture opportunity to make a trade, do an arbitrage or do a liquidation with the knowledge of the mempool data. And secondly, with the faster transaction propagation plus what we call the inclusion rate, most likely you're going to get your transaction included in the next block, then a few blocks later. That gives you a huge advantage because your competitor is going after the same trade opportunity. And you are sending your risk reaction trade at the same time, but you're going to reach your destination faster, meaning that you're winning the trade in that situation. Even if you react slightly slower than your competitor, good chance is you catch up with them because you're faster with our network. That's how you benefit as a market maker. That's one part of it. And the second part of your question is how you prevent your transaction, your own bundles getting front run or sandwich. Some interesting fact when you talk about private transaction or front running protection, a lot of people would think about flashbots, because flashbot is a fee service for users to submit their trade and get private transaction protected from front running. But in fact, BlockRoute was starting to provide front running protection before flashbots even exist. We're a pioneer in this area. And we have years of experience now to provide private transaction front running protection. As a BlockRoute user, you can actually send your transactions or bundles and label it as private transaction. On Ethereum alone, that's why other chains, your transaction sent to us will not be shown up in the mempool data. Meaning that when the front runners, sniping bots are trying to front run your transaction, they can't actually see your transaction. They got nowhere to front run riff. That's how you protect your transaction, no matter you are a regular user or a market maker or a trader.
Your business model is then essentially your service fee or for the number of protocols that I'm using, or how does the charging work for you?
We serve a very wide range of traders, Wintermill, GSR, Jane Street, Flow Traders, you name it, those big boys in the industry, to an individual DeFi algo trader, maybe trading from Singapore, and everything in between. Those are our users. We actually offer some of our service for free, including if you're an end user that just use MetaMask to trade, you can use our fund running protection for free. You don't actually have to pay us to use it. So that's something that we are happy to provide to end users to make this space better. If you are a professional trader, either you're running your own small shop or you're as big as the Wintermill guy, you can use our service by paying us a monthly fee. The range is from $300 per month to $15K per month. And if you're maxing out things you need to do, it can go up to $40K a month. It really have a very high range of what people pay us. But you ask, is it based on how many chains you use or something? It's one of those factors. If you're trading on only Ethereum, you can start with the $300 plan that we call it the professional plan. But if you're trading on the BNB chain, usually the minimum that you need to use in our plan would be enterprise, and it's around $1,200 a month. But if you're trading on like multiple chains all at once, and one very important factor is how globally deployed you are. Because if you're an individual or small team, if you're trading only on Ethereum, you probably have 3 or 4 nodes covering the most important regions. Maybe you put one in Tokyo, another 2 in North America, and 1 in London or Frankfurt, something like that, to get the major regions covered. That would settle you somewhere in the enterprise plan that I mentioned. But if you're a big trading firm, you want really sophisticated global deployment, meaning that on all those chains you're trading on, in most cases, you have 20, 30 nodes or gateways that we run for you across the globe for one single chain. Because when you're picking up opportunities, when you are really close to where the transactions start, it would give you a huge advantage. When I'm talking about huge advantage, sometimes we're only talking about 3 or 5 milliseconds. And that 3 or 5 milliseconds make a world of difference between winning or losing the trades. That's why big firms will be more competitive in terms of global deployment.
Given that there is the free version that I can use as a single trader, does this prevent the trading quality being split between the folks who can afford your infrastructure and the people who can't? Because clearly, we were talking earlier about even 200 milliseconds, which is like ages in program trading. If you're not able to play in that league, you're playing in the second division, right? And you need to live with the 20-minute block time until you see your trade confirmed.
When you talk about different free tier and paid tier of users, right now, if you are not a paid user of us, we call it the introductory tier users, there are some E functions you can actually use. For example, the private transaction I mentioned, the front running protection. And also, we open our BNB chain bundle function for free tier of users. This is a very new feature that we released not too long ago, just a few weeks ago. And we would love to have more searchers to start using it because that's one huge initiative to bring up the game of MEV space in the BNB chain. So we would love to offer it to more users by making it a free service. But I would say that like for the paid tier of users, I love to use basketball analogy. I'm a big NBA fan. When you're playing professional basketball, there are so many things you can do from the very minor league. Let's say you're playing in Japan or Hong Kong for a professional team. You still have a mile away from making it to the NBA, right? So that's the same game, but not the same game. If you are a small player in the field, just starting out or individually as an algo trader or something, so trying to capture some value based on your own trade strategies, a lot of this user will use share notes, not running their own notes. And then if you start using our lowest tier plan, that would up your game a lot in your own league. Let's say you're playing professional basketball in Hong Kong. When everybody is playing the league somehow with their slippers on, now we're giving you a pair of Nike. That alone wouldn't make you a Michael Jordan in your own league, but that gives you a huge advantage. And that's exactly the same, even in the highest tier. And what I love to say is, especially in all those advanced teams, all of them are paying so much effort just to get 1 millisecond faster than other guys. And BlockRoute makes them hundreds of milliseconds faster with the same trade infrastructure. We're giving them huge value and we up your game no matter which league you're on.
Your secret sauce is the infrastructure that you built yourself. You don't need your own cable. You rent that, presumably. Nobody owns their own cable anymore these days. But what is your own IP and what is still very innovative, but the right composition of components that were already there in a more efficient way?
Love to answer that question because there's not too much that we cannot talk about. So we'd love to share about what makes us really fast compared to everything else. First of all, when we talk about we're low latency, a lot of people, when they first hear about that, they were mistaken. Hey, are we a layer 2, layer 1 or something? We're not a chain. We're pretty much a layer 0 of network technology. We can cover different chains. Right now, we cover Ethereum, BNB chain, Polygon, and Solana. We have plans to cover more important chains on DeFi too. We have another language spoken within our BDN, the network. All those chains that I mentioned, including other chains that we haven't covered yet, have their own protocol, but they all run on P2P network because it's blockchain. It's all distributed. But like I said, we're not replacing the P2P network. We are building a superhighway on top of it, so that our users and important actors in the market can take advantage of it. What makes the transmission of block data and transaction data so much faster compared to the P2P network? I would highlight a couple of technologies or techniques that we use. We now have 10 patent awards in those technologies we use to build the BDN. That helps a lot with our background because BlockRoute comes from actually the PhD thesis of one of our co-founder and CEO, Uri Climens. And another co-founder of BlockRoute is actually his professor back then. That's how the topic was exactly, hey, the P2P network sucks in terms of being really fast and really efficient as a network. How do we make it better? That thesis turned into the core concept of BlockRoute. And we have been building 5-6 years now to actualize it. We have those patents. And what makes us faster? I'll give you one key technology that we do. Because on the P2P network, when you try to send transaction data from one node to the next, you always send the full set of data from point A to point B. But within our BDN, there are relays, backbones, like a gateways connected to the BDN and all those cloud API endpoints. Within all those things that within the network, everything is around 90% compressed. We use what we call transaction indexing. A raw transaction is around 500 bytes long, and the transaction ID we use in the BDN is around 4 bytes. When a transaction comes in, no matter it's in form of block or transaction, we give them an ID and we label them, and then it propagates across the BDN. Without the full set of transaction data, it's more like we compress it and we decompress it where it needs to be. That alone would make it a lot faster and a lot more efficient within our BDN than outside the BDN. That's one technology we use. And the second technology is cut-through routing. What is cut-through routing? It is in the P2P network, when you're running your node, when you're receiving the block data, you verify that in your node, and then you send it to your peers. So it's a receive, verify, send process. So the BDN version of it is a relay in our BDN. The second is start receiving the first byte of data into the relay. It's already sending it to the peers and to the next points. It's more like a streaming. You are sending when you're receiving it, instead of a send, verify, receive, which is much slower and not as optimized. So this, together with optimized topology and a few things, makes us so much faster. We have something what we call the average block propagation speed. That's actually publicly accessible in our BDN Explorer website. What we highlight is the number between time A and time B. What is time A? Time A is when the block first enter our BDN. Let's say it comes from Tokyo. A block entered BDN through a user or a node in Tokyo. And when it first enter it, the BDN will have to propagate it to all those gateways, relays, backbones that we have around the world. It can be on the another end of the world to be the last one to receive that block. That is the time when it first entered the BDN to the last touch point, the last gateway who received that. That's the average time. Most of the time, you will have to travel around the world to do that. Usually, when you look at the data, we can do it most of the time under 140 milliseconds. Let me remind you that the speed of light, you can go through the planet for around 7.5 times in a second. That is 133 milliseconds. So we're not too far off from the speed of light. Just give you a few nerd numbers to tell you about our BDN, the speed and technology.
You said your business model is ultimately based on blockchain, not necessarily being from a speed perspective what it should be. Upside down, then the risk to your business model is that somebody comes up with a better chain that ultimately runs fast. Do you see that out there? Is there somebody that you're not supporting yet, maybe good enough that it wouldn't warrant the expense of putting Blockstroud underneath?
Each chain, each major chain with a significant DeFi volume on at this point, our BDN, if you look at it very objectively, we create value more in certain chain compared to another because of the design of the chain. That's a fact. You can't be as good to everyone, as good to every chain. That's just how it is. Because of the design or the block time, centralized sequencer will make a difference. All these factors affect how much value we create to the ecosystems within that chain. The bottom line is, if it's a blockchain, meaning that it's going to be distributed, it's going to be decentralized. Meaning that even if a lot of chains will now start with centralized sequencer or they are not yet at the decentralized validator phase or something, the users and the traders and the people who provide this on their chain projects, Web3 projects, whatever DeFi project it is on their chain, would still be on the P2P network. And if there's one thing we are solving in Blockstroud, we are solving the inefficiency and speed of the P2P network. And right now, by design, all chains are running on the P2P network, no matter how you designed it. So I still think for each chain, when there is enough volume and activities, DeFi, even they are solving logistic, real world logistic issue, we deliver value in that situation.
So we're ultimately back to the blockchain trilemma. you're taking care of the scalability. That is what the blockchains ultimately don't provide. The blockchains provide the decentralization and the security, and you're the missing piece in the triangle.
Yeah, I think that's a great view to it, because people almost have accepted that if you need to have the benefit of decentralized and have good security, you will have to take the cost of not being the fastest system or financial network. Because let's not forget that when the blockchain first get a lot of adoption, it's not starting from DeFi. DeFi happened in the DeFi summer in 20. And before that, we take it as more, hey, all this digital assets we can play with. And there are a lot of real world problems we can solve through that. But we didn't build it starting with the mindset of, hey, it's going to be a global financial infrastructure network. That's not how it was planned to be or built to be. A lot of our product or innovation is to try to get DeFi closer to a finished product. You may ask, what is a finished product of DeFi? It should be global, fast, transparent, always on, and market efficient. That's what I consider a finished product of DeFi. We're not close to that. A lot of us in BlocksRoute, we believe in the value of DeFi, and we want to make it better.
That leads me to my very last question. We need to talk about money once more. You raised $80 million from SoftBank in 22, so hopefully you have some runway. Outside of the goal that you described of really lifting up DeFi to a CeFi level in terms of these parameters outlined, what is ultimately the good outcome for BlocksRoute? Is this going to be a company that will continue to survive as a standalone service provider? Is there an acquisition play from Bloomberg or whoever else might buy a company like yours? I don't know. What could the exit look like?
Let me start with the runway. That's the question we answered to all our investors in the past year of the FTX situation. And we're very happy to tell them that if the market goes really bad for many years to come, our runway will be over 10 years. That's why I really love to answer that question, because we have very healthy and very strong financials. And we are not running based off a token format. We don't plan to issue a token at all. And we're more like a traditional Web3 tech startup. Is there such a thing? I don't even know. But we're running it more like a SaaS format, more like a traditional tech startup. That's why we have really good runway. And we have very solid revenue, even in a bad market situation. That's answered first part of your question. And to your second part of the question, where do we see as our exit game plan? We're not even seeing the horizon of it yet. Last round, our valuation was $400 million in our Series B. Next round, of course, we target to get a lot higher than that. We don't have a funding plan, at least in the next 12 calendar months. But in a few years, BlocksRoute will become a powerhouse in DeFi, which we're already on the track of doing that. Meaning that if you are trading on DeFi, algo trading, and you are a significant player in the MVV space and DeFi, you pretty much should get a lot of value being our partner or our user. That's where we're heading to, and we're on a good pace getting there. And at that time, I cannot say for sure, is it going to be an acquisition play or IPO play? I'm not sure. There are only a few Web3-related companies who went through the IPO process that is not centralized exchange. There's still a long way to do it. I think our case is better than a lot of those, because most of them include a token versus equity situation, and we don't have that kind of problem. I can totally see that a huge merge or potentially acquisitions from some huge tech giants, all of them can come into play. Or even IPO on our own is also a possibility, right?
It's a comfortable position to be in. That's fantastic. You can focus on building without looking over your shoulder and worrying about the next round. As an entrepreneur, you can do the entrepreneurial things.
You really cannot focus on building when you keep looking at what do we do in 2 months or 3 months. But we're still trying very hard to be more efficient, getting our product development cycle faster, getting to our marketing or PR tipping point faster than it needs to be, things like that. It's still a huge pressure of competition, because this industry is more like a hot potato game. So if you're in super good position today, doesn't mean that things are going to be the same next year. And let's not talk about next year. Like 3-4 months in, things may change a lot. So we keep pushing ourselves to drive better results and move faster.
We'll keep following that for sure. It was fantastic to talk to you, Curtis. I learned a lot again. So that's why I love doing these podcasts. Thanks for taking the time and sharing all your insights with our listeners.
It's been a wonderful chat. Thanks.